Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today I have a special guest, Dr. Marion Mass. She's a pediatrician. She is an advocate for the doctor and patient relationship and the future of medicine. I think we have, during this whole healthcare reform debate, there's been two people absent or two entities, and that's the doctor and the patient. Everybody's talking about how we can make it better, how to reform it. But they're not on the front line. They're not in the doctor's office. They're not sitting across from the patient and really practicing medicine. They think they know what it is, but it takes a doctor to really talk about that. And I think that people are really unaware of the encroachment of into the doctor and patient relationship. All these other mid-level entities, administrators, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, everybody's coming into the healthcare profession and becoming the front line, the voice, the face of medicine. And I think it's time we take our power back because it's not the same. It's not better, but it's not the same. So I want to thank you, Dr. Mass, for coming on. I know that you've been on the front line and you're a practicing physician like I am, not an administrator, not somebody on the outside looking in. And I wanted to get your perspective of what's going on in healthcare and how we can actually make it better. So welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Wonderful.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm a pediatrician in the Philadelphia area. I actually practice in the area where I grew up in suburban Bucks County. I went to Penn State undergrad, and then I went to Duke Medical School, where I met my husband. He's a ear, nose, and throat surgeon like yourself. While at Duke, I served on a Native American reservation, the Cheyenne Reservation in Montana. I finished medical school in 1994, and then I trained at, it was then called Children's Memorial Hospital, it's now the Robert Rory Hospital in Chicago. I trained in pediatrics, and then I moved back to this area.
So you
and I've been in a little bit of every portion of medicine. I've done inpatient work, which included nursery, delivery room, emergency room, and inpatient. I spent 4 years doing outpatient medicine in a very small practice, and now I'm back in an emergency room, large hospital, urgent care setting.
So you've seen every single side of practice, from being in the rural area where that's the front line, where it's not, I mean, you're kind of on your own in terms of resources, Native American reservation, you've been everywhere. So you can speak to exactly what's good about medicine and what's bad. I mean, how do we get to this point where doctors are basically on the outside looking in?
Wow. You know what? I kind of look at, like, if you want to get to a root cause, mm-hmm. I feel like 30 or 40 years ago, people in suits with ties took a look at the system and said, wow, we have a system, this healthcare system, that's chewing up an enormous percentage of our economy. How can we get in on that? And I feel like over decades, they've carved out a bigger piece of the pie for themselves every year, leaving the people that actually do the grunt work, mostly physicians and nurses, mm-hmm. To receive less and less of the pie. But worse than that, as they continue taking from the pie, costs have increased and quality has really gone down. And then I think as time has gone on, physicians have become frustrated by bureaucracy and paperwork and all the obstructions that get between them and the patient. Really, essentially, what do most patients want? They want more time with their physicians, because medicine is it's a very personal place to be. When you're sick, you're vulnerable. And you need someone that you can trust. And to be able to trust someone, you need time with them to explain your problem, and they need time to consider a solution, and you need time to work together on that. Mm-hmm. And we're running out of time, because as time has gone on, we've had more and more bureaucracy, mandates, and obstruction that have been inserted between us and the patient. Patients are frustrated. They don't have time with their physicians, but because physicians are their front line, I think deep down they recognize that the system is hard to navigate, but they don't spend face-to-face time with all those administrators. They spend face-to-face time with the physicians, and they're frustrated, and the frustration comes out to us frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think the best alliance that could happen is between practicing physicians and patients.
I absolutely agree with that. And it's been a concerted effort to try to rip that foundation apart. We've been demonized, I think, by every single part of the healthcare system has blamed us for the problem. It's our fault it's so expensive. It's our fault patients aren't, you know, getting good customer service. It's our fault the hospitals aren't documenting properly so they can't make their money. It's all sorts of things. And we've actually just stood silent, I think, where all of these people have been able to define us, define our role, define our worth, our value. That, to me, is just, how do we get so passive? We've decided to let everybody else take the lead. Is it a psyche issue with us that, you know, we really don't complain, we just get it done? Or is this a medical school issue, do you think, where we're being taught to become a team member and to take a back seat and just be part of a whole? How do we do that?
I think it's multifactorial, and I think it's been a moving target, and it's changed over time. So by multifactorial, I see it... I think physicians go into medicine because they want to be hands-on people. They really like, you know, if you think back to before you became a doctor, you thought about what was this going to look like for me?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your conception of being a doctor was a patient was going to come in, you were going to hear their story, you were going to examine them, you were going to take care of their problem. You know, if you were a surgeon, maybe you would perform a procedure to help them fix the problem, or as an internist or a pediatrician, maybe make a diagnosis, prescribe a treatment, follow them, and functionally help the patient. We didn't go into medical school to check boxes and do paperwork. We didn't, you know, as I said for so many years, we didn't want to become paper pushers. You know, people who simply filled out forms and did paperwork. We really wanted something hands-on. So over time, we've been enforced to do that paperwork, but the people who are enforcing that are not, by and large, the people who are actually doing our jobs and see what the patient's needs are.
No.
And they're not people who... The very basic medical interaction is that patient-doctor interaction, and the ability for the physician to listen and to have the knowledge base to know what's wrong and the knowledge base to be able to prescribe whatever treatment that patient needs. And we're the only ones in the whole system that can diagnose a pneumonia, deliver a baby, resuscitate a baby, take out a tonsil, take out an appendix. And as physicians, somehow within the system of workers, we end up having the least power,
mm-hmm,
and the least say in how medicine has progressed. I think over years, I have seen more and more dissatisfaction from physicians out of frustration for the fact that they can't do their jobs. They can't take care of their patients the way that they know their patients need to. Instead, they have someone in a suit who did not spend all of those years in medical school and residency telling them what to do and what's best for their patient, when that person with the suit really has no frontline knowledge of what is best for that patient.
Well,
they know what's best for their bureaucracy and the continuance of their job,
but
they don't know what's best for the patient.
Oh, I absolutely agree. It's a completely different frame of reference and mindset, and it's a different goal. Their goal really isn't to get the patient better. It's not the art of medicine. It's the bottom line, and they are becoming mutually exclusive. You know, when you're talking about an insurance company, for example, deciding what's medically necessary and what is standard of care, and not the physician or the physician's specialty organization, you know, their board. How is that possible? How, I mean, to me, that seems to be illegal for a non-doctor, a non-medical entity to practice medicine and deny a patient care after they've signed a contract for that organization to just cover them, not to decide their access, but to cover their needs. How did that, I mean, to me, that's illegal. I don't know how you see that, but there's something immoral and illegal about that.
Certainly immoral. I can't claim that I could define illegality. I leave that for the courts. But it certainly is a grave injustice to the patient to have the insurance company practice medicine. And it's certainly an injustice to the physician who is left in the position of liability. And we're also left in the position of explaining to the patient that we can't give them what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And what the patient doesn't see behind closed doors, the patient is frustrated because they, by and large, they can't get what they want. So if you've ever spent time with a patient that's been denied a treatment or denied a diagnosis or a diagnostic procedure or a medication, they're enormously frustrated and they've got a fight on their hands. And it usually ends up being the physician that has the fight for them, which is taking yet more time away from our patients.
Mm-hmm.
So I met a woman, oh, I think 2 weeks ago, she brought her child in, and you know, it was clear that she was on chemo. She had a bandana on and was wearing a mask because she was immunocompromised. And, you know, in the course of conversation, I just asked about her general health. And she told me that she had breast cancer. And somehow the story came out that her physician had ordered a test for her that would have been diagnostic. And she was young. I think she was in her early 30s. And the insurance company denied it. And the physician had a nearly two-month fight with the insurance company before they could get her the diagnostic test that proved that she had breast cancer. And the insurance company told her and the physician that she was too young to have breast cancer, that the test wasn't warranted. Well, it turned out the physician was right. The test was warranted. She had breast cancer, and this woman had a two-month delay in her care. Flabbergasted, you know? So there's the physician who clearly knew what they were doing, made the right call, and, you know, fortunately, took the time and had the care to fight for her patient.
Mm-hmm.
But the insurance company is looking at a computer screen and looking at algorithms and saying, nope, you don't meet the requirements for getting this test, so therefore we're going to deny the coverage of it. And I guess the woman could have had made the decision to say, well, I'll pay out of pocket and I'll fight this later. But, you know, for many Americans, that becomes an issue, and I guess they're frightened as well. Once I pay out of pocket, am I ever going to see my money again? And when they're paying so much already, so this is a woman who was paying an extraordinary amount for her health care,
mm-hmm.
and for her health insurance, I can't call it health care.
Exactly.
And the insurance company was practicing medicine, but practicing poor medicine, and then holds no liability for their poor decisions. The physician not only holds the liability for the outcome, but we also hold the harder position of having to look that patient in the eye and tell them, we are fighting as hard as we can, but we can't get you what you need.
I think on that note, we need to take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine.
Patients and physicians need to unite because we have a common potential enemy, I would call it.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And before the break, you mentioned a case about the insurance company practicing medicine. You know, I wrote a blog about a week and a half ago, and part of, for me, the reform effort can't just be repealing and replacing Obamacare. That's the problem, but it's not the only problem. The problem is the power that the insurance companies have over the practice of medicine. I would do three things. I was just telling my producer in the break. Price transparency, so people actually know the cost of what they're getting. having your health savings account be unlocked so you can use it for anything outside of what your insurance company deems appropriate. If you want to do alternative treatment, if you want to leave the country and do medical tourism, it's your money. You should be able to do whatever you like with it and put as much money in it as you can, et cetera. And the third thing is really the crux. The risk has to change. You said the magic words. Doctors are on the hook for everything that goes on in the healthcare profession. We're the ones that's blamed. We're the ones that are sued. I think that the insurance company should start bearing risk. If that patient you described has a bad outcome, is more morbidity because of delay in diagnosis, then she should be able to sue the insurance company for practicing medicine without a license. I'm telling you, Marion, that would stop a lot of the nonsense that goes on, the games that the insurance companies are playing with doctors and patients.
Oh, absolutely. I think you just kind of need that sentinel case out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. I think we are at such an interesting point in medicine, a turning point potentially. And I think a turning point has come about. You also brought up transparency. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've watched those deductibles climb. So patients are paying out of pocket more than ever for various procedures, visits, diagnosis, treatment, etc. And when they're paying out of pocket, they're a little irritated about that. All of a sudden, they're looking at the price.
Mm-hmm.
As hard as it's been for patients, and I feel sorry for them about that, it's made them realize something. We've all been decoupled from the cost for decades, because for decades, the insurance model has grown into the insurance company is involved and pays for every little single point of care. Well, that all becomes costly over time, because every point of care has a lot of documentation surrounding it, potentially fights surrounding it, whether or not the insurance company is paying.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bureaucracy, a lot of mandates surrounding every point of care, and those all cost money. The patient doesn't see that. So they go to the doctor, I paid a lot to the insurance company. The insurance company should take care of everything. And when the insurance company doesn't, then the doctor sort of left holding the bag. The patient over time has now, with these increased deductibles, is now paying out of pocket. And they're taking a look and thinking like, wow, I don't want to pay that.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to shop around. I don't think it's a good thing that they have enormous deductibles, but I think it's a good thing that patients are learning to shop around, because shopping around causes entities to have to lower their prices. For example, I just tore my ACL 3 weeks ago. I think you have to learn at 49 that you can't bounce around like Tigger anymore. And lesson learned. So I had to get an MRI, and I, at least knowing what I know, I called my insurance company. I asked them the places that I could go to, and then I called both those places and asked them what the amount using my insurance would cost to get the MRI in each of those places. It was half as much at the MRI freestanding center as it cost at the local hospital. That's actually because of hospital facility fees. You know, so you're busy paying the hospital administrators and all the salaries that, you know, go into hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But the freestanding MRI center is smart enough to realize if we offer the same product at a reduced price, we're going to have more people coming here. So I think patients need to be made aware that with a couple phone calls, they can save, and I end up saving $400. That's not an inconsequential amount.
No,
you know?
No, that's groceries.
At least one textbook for my child who's going to college next year.
Yeah, it's a quality of life issue. So how, from a legislative, because I know that you are part of the legislative process, the groups of doctors that go up to Capitol Hill to get our point across. Why is it that the legislators are so ignorant of the fact that having health insurance doesn't equal access to quality health care? You and I both have gone up to Capitol Hill. We don't seem to be getting that message across to them. Why is that?
Well, I think physicians have not been organized into a group that actually speaks for doctors. So, in other words, there have been groups of, there's organized medicine. Each state has a medical society, and each state's medical society advocates within their state level There are national organizations that speak for each specialty, but those national organizations all go around asking for something different. For a long time, I think America construed it that the American Medical Association was the go-to group for doctors to go to, but I think most doctors don't go there anymore because they don't see the American Medical Association as being a group that speaks for doctors. The AMA has done some wonderful public health initiatives, and that's terrific. I think that's very needed. However, I don't think they are standing for the needs of physicians to adequately be their patients' advocates. And I think physicians, most that I know, are not satisfied with the job that the AMA has done advocating for physicians. So small groups have emerged, grassroots groups, that I think are trying to educate lawmakers. And it's a long process because medicine is enormously convoluted and has only become more so over years as the special interests have gotten more and more involved. So, you know, if you go and look what groups influence Congress with money, there's a great website you can go to. It's called Open Secrets. I snoop around there all the time. And if you look at the top lobby groups in America and you look at the top 10, everyone always says it's the NRA. The NRA is not even in the top 10.
No, it's not.
List. So, you know, besides realty groups and Chamber of Commerce, which are very high up there, there are four main groups that are all healthcare related, and they are big insurance, big hospital, which represents administrators and not physicians, big pharma, and the American Medical Association. And in one way or another, the American Medical Association is tied to all of those other groups. And I call these people the special interests of medicine. There's, you know, other smaller groups, and there's other groups that are tied to these four. But these are the special interests that have been running healthcare for years. And patients and doctors are left with very little say. And I think, you know, these four groups show up in congressional offices daily, whereas physicians are busy taking care of their patients. And as time has gone on, our job has grown to be taking care of our patients plus doing the regulatory paperwork that's passed down to us from insurance company and government. And now we have more time that's taken away from our patients and the ability to advocate, and we have no voice. So I think if physicians simply got together and drew a line in the sand and said no more, you know, look at the, if there's a complete imbalance. I'm not saying we don't need insurance companies, because some patients may choose to have the insurance company pay for every single healthcare interaction. Maybe they like that model. But I think as that model has grown up over time, the patients have been decoupled from the rising costs. And now that we have the big deductibles, all of a sudden they're seeing the cost. They're questioning it. And there is no movement with any legislation that's happening that is doing something to decrease costs. So, in fact, it's actually been the opposite. I mean, we all know over the last 10 years, the costs have just continued to rise. We were sold a bill of goods that was called the Affordable Care Act, but really, there was nothing that was done to address the rising cost of healthcare in America. The costs have gone up across the board. We've just shifted those costs around and made them more expensive overall for all of America as a collective whole.
Well, from your standpoint, from a practicing physician standpoint, how do you, I mean, your patients, they're coming into a hospital setting or an ER setting, so maybe it's not as easy to educate them. But when you send them out, or if you have them follow up, do you educate them that, hey, there's a separate, there's a different scale of medicine where they're independent doctors who will list their prices online, that it's, you need to go small. It's not about going large anymore. It's not the corporate structure of medicine that's going to make it better. It's going back to the personal touch, the individual, the private doctor, who will tell you what the price is and can control their costs. Is that something that you find that you have to, you find yourself educating patients about?
You ask a difficult question. I work for a large hospital, and we are staunchly encouraged to support a large hospital model.
Got you.
That's not necessarily always a bad thing. I think a better question to ask in my given setting, so I work in an urgent care setting for a large hospital, and I'd say about 25% of our patients are acute injury type issues, but a large portion of our patients come in because they can't get in with their primary care provider.
Mm.
So, and this is all across the board. This is people that have the very best, most expensive insurance care policy there is, down to uninsured that, you know, can't get in, and also patients that are on Medicaid that can't get in with their primary care provider. So these patients are very frustrated because, you know, they'll tell me, you know, I have insurance and, you know, I call my doctor and it's going to take days for my child to be seen and they're sick and I really need them to be seen now.
Mm-hmm.
So I get asked over and over again, why is it that I can't get in with my physician? And, you know, when I'm asked, they answer the question. You know, we're usually quite busy and I'm trying to take care of the patient. But if they ask and I have a few moments, I'll tell them, your physician is busy doing paperwork to meet the needs and the mandates that the insurance company is putting upon them or the government is putting upon them in the case of Medicaid. And they are now spending twice as much time doing paperwork as they are actually seeing patients, which is an extraordinary number if you think about it. So if you're a patient, you don't really care that your doctor does paperwork. You care that your doctor sees you, listens to you, and takes care of your child or yourself if you're an adult. It's not helping you that the physician has so much paperwork to do. In fact, it's actually hurting you because it's taking away time that doctor has to see patients. So we've become, you know, box checkers and hoop jumpers for the insurance companies and for government. And we are I think it's a power imbalance. I'm not seeking power in medicine other than the power to be able to heal my patients. And that power lies in the time that I can spend with patients. And that time over decades has been continually cut into by the growing power of the special interest.
Well, I think we've reached a point where we can't cut anymore. It's now, we're in a position where we're no longer, almost at the point where we're not practicing medicine. We are just performing, you know, evidence-based, algorithm-driven medicine, conveyor belt medicine, which is not the standard of care, not where I've trained, not where you've trained, not our Hippocratic Oath. Now, when we come back from the break, because we have to take one right now, I want to discuss the mindset of a physician and how, you know, really get, you know, drill down to what it's like and what the mindset needs to be going forward to take our power back. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking with Dr. Marion Mass. She's the co-founder of Practicing Physicians of America. She's also co-chair of Physicians Against Drug Shortages, a member of the National Physicians Council on Healthcare Policy. So she's not just talking about this, she's out there doing something about it. And what I really loved when I met you in D.C. initially was your passion for bringing us together. One of the things that I found that the people who are against doctors and against real reform, they want to divide and conquer. We have the people who want single payer, we have liberal, we have conservative, we have all these different carve-outs of us, and it keeps us as physicians from getting together. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because I want people to understand this, I say it all the time, we all want the same thing. We just may have different ways of getting to it. And what works for me may not work for you. If you like the Affordable Care Act, then you should be able to have it. But for those who don't, they should have choice. They should have free market options. They should be able to get to somebody who is like-minded, who they feel confident and comfortable with. How do you see us as doctors moving forward? I know it's a power imbalance. It's administrator versus doctor. It's nurse practitioner. Doctors of nursing versus doctors, physician assistants versus doctors. There's so many special interest groups in this healthcare pie now, and they're all exerting their dominance. How do we get to a point that it should always be about the patient, no matter who's taking care of them?
Right. I think, first of all, we have to lose our fear. And we have to lose our fear and recognize that no one can do the job that we do. And it's really important that we continue to do that job and we educate patients that if we're not allowed to do so, that 20 years down the line, they're not going to have adequate, well-trained, passionate physicians that care to take care of them anymore. And I hate to say it, but I've seen with my own eyes when I was watching the care of my parents, how I think medicine in some cases has changed and the way that physicians are being trained has changed. And it can have disastrous consequences, even in good settings with, you know, good resources at good hospitals. Mm-hmm. And that's what actually drew me into the fight to really start speaking up for patients when I realized how bad it had become.
What is it that you saw?
My parents are both gone now, and my mother had developed Alzheimer's, and she was institutionalized at the time that my father passed away. So I was at a very vulnerable portion of my life. My father had lived under my roof with me and my children and my husband on hospice for 3 weeks and then passed, and we buried him. And my mother, as I think a consequence of grieving with Alzheimer's, or not being able to grieve, I should say, she kind of had a psychotic break and needed to be hospitalized for inpatient psych. She started becoming violent in her nursing home. And so she was taken to a hospital about an hour and a half from us to the emergency room. And the first thing they did was they gave her a hefty dose of sedation because she was combative. Mm-hmm. And then they said, oh, look, she's fine. We're going to send her back. In fact, she had been sent to that particular hospital so that she could be admitted for inpatient geriatric psych. Mm-hmm. And so I pointed that out, and the hospital said, oh, but we can't admit her to geri psych because she has dementia. And I said, wow, who's on your geri psych unit? Like, I can't imagine if you're, like, carving out all the dementia patients and not allowing them, then who's up there? And they just said that was an administrative rule. And for me, and this was a large hospital setting, I guess I would call this corporate medicine, mm-hmm. big medicine in America. You know, the first issue for me was that this hospital has rules that don't make any sense. Well, who's making those rules? Are those physicians making those rules or those administrators? I can't say in this case. I guess I would wager my guess that it's not the physicians because it's a completely against medicine common sense rule. Mm-hmm. So instead, my mother got hospitalized on the regular medical ward. We tucked her in for the night, and I was wary because my parents had always gotten their care through doctors that they had known for years, that they had a relationship with. They were very community-minded people. They did a lot of volunteer work in the community. They had a lot of respect in the community. And not that doctors should give care to people that give back, but I think because they had an existing relationship with their physicians and their hospital, they got good care.
Mm-hmm.
And now I was in a ground, in a location that I was not familiar with and my mother was not familiar with. No one knew her there. So to try to combat this, the next morning, I made the hour and a half drive to the hospital and went up there with coffee and chocolates and, intending to try to explain to my hospital this is what my mother's needs are, and I'm a physician, and I want to be able to advocate for her and find out where we are so we can get to a good place and get her back to her nursing home. So I found her at almost noon. Her breakfast tray was untouched, and she was over-sedated and slumped over in her hospital bed in restraints. So I went out to the desk to find some help so that I could move her up in her bed and help feed her. And I found two medical students from a prominent medical school from my area. And I said, hey, could, one of you help move my mom?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't actually doing anything other than texting and talking. And they looked up from that, and they said to me, that's not our job. And they went right back to texting and talking.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when I said that I think that medical students are being trained differently,
mm-hmm.
they're trained under the whole corporate model of everyone has their specific role, and you can't step outside of your specific role. And I've always viewed healthcare as a team approach whereby, everyone steps up, and if you see something that needs to be done, you don't ask questions. You just do it
mm-hmm.
because the patient and the patient's family is at a vulnerable state in their life, and they need every bit of help that they can get. These students didn't even offer to help me find someone that could move my mother. So I wasn't asking for them to do everything for me, just for a slight helping hand. And I think I realized that the way that medical students are being trained, that they're not trained to care anymore. They're just told that here's your job, don't step outside the scope of your job, march to this drum that we're going to tell you how to beat, with no thought towards the patient. And I think that's really sad.
It's devastating. I'm so sorry for your loss. I totally understand and empathize with that. And that's the thing that people don't see. Until you're in it, until you have a loved one that has to be affected by it, you don't get it. And having health insurance doesn't equal access to quality health care. Having your power as a patient stripped from you because it's not somebody's job or because they have a diagnosis that doesn't fit a corporate standard is an issue. I mean, that's affected your mom and you. I mean, I don't even know how you got through that without breaking down in some way. It's very difficult.
Oh, it actually got worse than that.
Oh, gee.
She was, and this was a large hospital system that wins all kinds of awards, and I sat down with a physician on the first day and explained to them who my mom was, and, I tried to set out realistic goals that I just wanted my mother to be awake in some sense, but mm-hmm. less combative. I knew we would have to change her medications, but that she was certainly over-sedated, and I was worried for her being able to feed herself and hydrate herself, which she did on a daily basis. I mean, she was cognitively not well, but physically she always had been.
Mm-hmm.
So she was over-sedated, and daily I went up there for 3 days in a row and found her in that same state, and it was almost as though, as I said, I went with coffee and chocolate in hands. You know how to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make friends so that I have someone who's going to advocate for my mom. Physicians should just do that anyway, but I just ran into obstruction after obstruction, and I just felt as though my requests fell on deaf ears, and then came 3 days when I could not get to the hospital. But I continued to call, and I was asking if my mother was any more awake, and was she able to feed herself, and I was reassured, but I couldn't see these things for myself. I couldn't talk to my mother. She was non-communicative at that point, and very vulnerable. And after a total of 6 days, the hospital told me she was ready for discharge, and I went up, and I found my mother completely dehydrated and unresponsive. And when I made the nursing staff look up the amount of fluid that my mother had gotten in the 3 days that I wasn't there, I found out that she had received 13 ounces in 3.5 days.
Oh, my gosh.
Shift after shift of complete neglect. And the sad part was they didn't even notice.
Are you kidding?
Wow.
What?
No, and this is a good, accoladed hospital. in a setting of good resources with a physician advocate, and I tried everything I could, and yet I couldn't help my mother. And that's when I realized the system was broken. And for me, I mean, I think I advocate so staunchly because I don't want this to happen to anyone else's mom. Most people don't have a physician advocate child that can speak for them when they're sick. And, you know, I can say that I have friend after friend that will, you know, call me and ask for their advice on how to care for their loved one because mm-hmm. they're in a system that they can't navigate and can't negotiate. So when you have great resources and knowledge in a good setting and you're getting bad care, wow, we are so broken. And I think we're so broken by this big corporate model of medicine where, you know, maybe even when we have insurance, we've got the card, but we no longer have care. And the ability to care and the desire to care, the passion to care that I think physicians felt for so long, is just being beaten out of us. It's so sad.
It is sad.
I'm here for the future.
And, I mean, I don't even have no words for this. I think this is exactly the reason that those of us who were trained with the Hippocratic Oath as being the centerpiece of our training are leaving the profession, are doing something else, and unfortunately, a lot of us are committing suicide, 400 per year. When I give that statistic on a talk on a radio show, people are aghast. They don't even understand. But to me, that just describes the level of feeling helpless. This is helplessness that doctors feel, that they can't do what they were put on this earth to do, that we can't take care of our patients, that we can't advocate for our patients. You shouldn't have had to even do any of that for your mom to help try to cajole them. This should be something that it's ingrained in the physician. I mean, we need to take a break because I had to get myself together for the next section. So let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, that's for sure. And like you see people hurt by it every day.
And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. So I know you've created these organizations because you're in the process of trying to change the direction of the ship. What is it that you're seeing? Are you seeing, I mean, I'm on board. I'm, you know, you don't have to work with me. But in terms of doctors out there, how are you reaching them? How are you letting them know we've got to take our power back? We can fix this. Is that a message that people are receiving?
Yeah. Social media is a tremendous, wonderful medium to work through. It's interesting. You know, over time, medicine has changed and I know wonderful physicians that are both men and women, but over time, there's been an increase in the percentage of women that have entered medicine. And it's interesting because a lot of us are part-time. We're part-time moms, part-time physicians. I mean, some are full-time. But I think women are very good at socially organizing people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see great movements, especially among women physicians groups, but among both male and female physicians groups, on social media of physicians starting to rise up and recognize that we have to organize because no one's going to do it for us. The government is not going to look out for us. Current organized medicine is not going to look out for us. Insurance companies aren't going to look out for us. The hospitals aren't going to look out for us. We have to look out for ourselves and for our patients.
And for those, you know, from different political and mindset backgrounds, those who want single payer versus people who like free market, how are you pulling those doctors together? Because there's such a divide in our country, which is, you know, artificial in my opinion. It's driven by emotion. There's no reason involved in it at all. How do you get the doctors to let that go and just be physicians?
You know what? I like what you said a few minutes ago, I think two segments ago, where you said that, you know, if you want your ACA exchange mm-hmm. plan and you have the ability to keep it, you can keep it. Patients should have choice. But I think that we have to recognize that in addition to choice, we need a sustainable system. And it needs to be sustainable on several fronts. Number one, like it or not, it needs to be fiscally sustainable. Mm-hmm. There is a cost to training. And there is a cost to the procedures that we do and the medications that we treat with, et cetera. And if the cost of all of this is increasing over time, we're not going to have a sustainable future to be able to care for all patients. We're always going to have the indigent among us. And I do think that as a society, we have to find ways to care for the indigent. But I think we need to unfetter physicians from being able to do so, so that we're decreasing the cost, so that over time we have a sustainable way to care for the patients of the future. And we also need a sustainable supply of physicians. And if you're asking someone to train, you know, for decades, and then you're not allowing them to do what they were trained to do, and you're continually cutting their pay, and you're continually making their job harder, over time they're going to burn out, and then you're going to run out of a supply of physicians, and then we're not going to have care at all. So I think when you got back to how do you bring physicians together, I think you need to find the common ground. And I think physicians that, anyone who advocates, whether they're left side or whether they're right sided, I think that they want what's best for their patient. So let's start there and let's agree. And, you know, I do agree. We need to find a way to give needed care to all patients. But when you start talking about having one single system that takes care of everything, then you're putting too much power in the hands of whoever's controlling that system. And so when people talk single payer, what I always say back is that once you hit the point that you have single payer, then you've concentrated the power. And over time and decades, I've watched an imbalance of power happen when the patient and the physician don't have any power, mm-hmm. and you've given your power to another entity. So single payer is the ultimate ceding of power to a single entity that will then control the way healthcare is run. And when one single entity controls it, well, I think we're going to go in the wrong direction, because we're not going to have sustainability. We're not going to have fiscal. We're not going to have the ability to conserve money for the future. Any single government program we've had in our country has always cost so much more than it was purported to cost when the program was laid out. We've seen that with every medical program. Medicare, I mean, when they initially, you know, came out with Medicare in 1964, between 64 and I think 1980, it was going to, the guess was it would cost, I think, $10 billion. Mm-hmm. And instead it cost $111 billion. Because whatever the government runs, the bill always ends up higher than was expected. So, and that we're not going to be fiscally sustainable. We're not going to be able to take care of patients for the future. We're going to have to severely ration care, and Americans are not going to enjoy that.
No, not at all. And it's doubling down. It will double down on the worst aspects of our healthcare system. And for the reasons that you described at the beginning, the top 10 lobbying groups to D.C. are these same entities, these four entities that are driving the cost and are in the business of controlling the practice of medicine. You think single payer is going to make them less powerful or more powerful? That's what people need to question. It's not about getting stuff for free. That's the thing that people get stuck on, or I think that their emotions get driven by. Medicine is not, in my opinion, it's not a right. It's a service. And when you make it a right, then you start, you know, it's okay to take from someone to give someone else. You should get free labor from a doctor because they owe you. That's not how this works. It won't work any better if the government's paying for it, if you believe that. I mean, I'm not sure what your opinion on that is, but when people tell you they think it's a right, what do you say to them?
I tell them it's a need, and I can see that there's needed care, but when we call it a right, then you're pushing towards people who are going to come and demand their right for every single point of care.
Mm-hmm.
So if you call it a right, is it your right that if your child has a fever to 103 and you're anxious and nervous and you want to see a physician, that you can see that physician in an hour? You know, I mean, what right are you looking for? So, and plus, essentially, you're just having an argument of words, and that's crazy. I think that getting back to the idea of look at the most vulnerable among us, and let's find better ways to give them care where we are not overspending for the future so that in the future we don't have the means to care for patients that need it. So right now, we have the same middleman. We call it what it is, but I mean, patients are angry of the control and the power that insurance company has, but when we care for the indigent in our country through Medicare and Medicaid, the government is the middleman.
Mm-hmm.
So the patients, the doctors have the ability to help their patients, but their hands are tied because their ability is being parsed out with the government as the middleman. And there's so much rule and regulation and mandate of that care that we're wasting money in the bureaucracy, whereas we could be looking towards physicians who might be incentivized to care for the indigent by maybe paying their malpractice or paying off their loans. Use physicians, you know, incentivize physicians to become the resource to help care for the indigent. I would do that myself. But, you know, I have three kids about to go to college, and if I wanted to work in a free clinic, I would feel the need to go get a separate malpractice insurance policy. So I'd have to pay for the privilege of helping the indigent. I would love to be unfettered. I mean, why would the government not see fit to see that we could contain costs by offering physicians, you know, malpractice insurance, even in their private settings, or allowing patients to deduct care that they give for charity,
mm-hmm.
Or paying off loans in a significant way for physicians that do charity care work.
I couldn't have said it better.
Find different ways to do it, but let's all agree. I mean, I think that there will always be the poor and the needy among us. Let's find ways to take care of those patients in fiscally responsible ways so that for the future we can take care of more when needed.
Marian, we have like 10 seconds left. How can people reach you?
Oh, we have a website, thepracticingphysiciansofamerica.org. And I, you know, encourage physicians that want to get involved in the fray to get on there. Practicing Physicians of America is there to protect the ability of all practicing physicians to serve as the patient's primary health care advocate. And we want to try to confront the unnecessary and overbearing regulation that limits us physicians' ability to serve their patients. For us, it gets down to the patient first, and when doctors are unfettered to do their job, patients will get better care. And it's time that we stood up for our profession, because the forces that have claimed to do so, I think, are doing an inadequate job, and the government is not going to stand for us. The insurance companies will not stand for us. The hospitals will not stand for us. We have to stand for ourselves and do so for the future of medicine and for our patients.
Thank you so much for joining me, Marian. I hope you'll do it again in the future. And thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.